There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Si White, you're not Josh Brown at all.
No, I'm not.
I know, but just as good. Fill it in a lovely little time. We have had a horrible morning getting in on the trains and stuff. Although you travelled half the country yesterday to get here.
Yeah, very different train, but
you almost got kidnapped by a taxi driver.
Yeah, all my stuff, or at least my stuff. I don't feared for my things.
I don't believe this person in the picture was an actual legitimate taxi driver. It seems that they signed themselves off. I don't know. It's just a weird way for it to go. But, for the wind-up, every Monday we dive into whatever's going on in the industry, talking points, news, games that we're playing, etc. And we've got a roundup of news and different things. Me and you cross over when it comes to playing things like Sea of Stars. You finished Resident Evil 4, Separate Ways, the DLC. We're going to talk about Yakuza / Like a Dragon stuff as well. But I thought we'd do news first. This is hot off the presses for Capcom. Mm. Coming from a write-up over on Bloomberg, addressing the idea that Xbox is doing the rounds in regards to acquisitions, a big old leak from last week. Saying that they were at one point, it was more about 2020 and 2021 era, planning to buy Warner Brothers and Nintendo, which was a big hilarious thing that we covered last week. But in response to that, Capcom have said that they think it would be better if they were equal partners in regards to an acquisition. Coming from CEO Haruhiro Sugimoto, saying that in regards to the acquisition, I guess they would want a way bigger piece of the pie. But does this fill you with confidence that, like, I guess they aren't hopefully going to be hoovered up?
Yeah, I think it's good in general. As a PlayStation owner, obviously, mm-hmm. I'm slightly biased that they're not going in the direction that I would have to buy a new console to play Resident Evil, for example. But, you know, they're one of the biggest sort of third-party companies. They always have been, even in their, they've had their rough spots, but they're doing a really good place now. So this isn't surprising news. But it is nice to read.
There's quite a lot of stuff at the minute where, like, there's so much going back and forward on, like, is the future of the industry in these, like, monthly services and locking down these big catalogs and libraries, and is there more safety with that? I don't think there is. But
no.
I guess there is, in terms of, like, if you have an idea for making a game and your shareholders or the general conversations that happen at the top end of that business are just saying, oh, we can't do this, it's too much of a risk. Like, if you watch I did watch the Double Fine documentary about making Psychonauts 2, and they only got that over the finish line because Microsoft stepped in and financed the rest of the project. And there's a kind of like a weight off the shoulders that comes with saying, it's okay, you're going to be on Game Pass, you're going to have an audience, and we're going to fund it. But at the same time, they, at the minute, seem to be trying to acquire so many people all at once that it just feels like the bottom would fall out of that.
That's exactly it. I think there's so many, like, different points that you can jump off from that. Like, Microsoft are buying so many companies as it is. So if they bought Capcom in this instance, would Capcom then fear, well, we're just one of many companies. So would they necessarily get the support that they might potentially think that they could get? But also, I don't think they need it. Like, some of their best-selling titles of all time have been some of their recent titles. So they must be pretty okay financially, which is another reason to come out and say, we're not looking to be bought because they're financially sound. It's really only companies that are looking for that support that are very much willing to...
It's definitely like a thing with a company's identity as well, because, like, Bethesda have mostly maintained their Bethesda-ness, like, through Starfield. Some of that's just from the bugs and glitches and the fact that it's not, you know, it's like, it is more polished than it was. It would have been when they, you know, would have released it a couple of years ago. That was one thing that came out of all the leaks and stuff, was that Starfield was meant to release in 2021. And then we've had about 2 years of polish, which was kind of the assumption on the fan side that like Bethesda would just kick it out the door. The modders will fix it later. And then when Xbox stepped in, well, this conversation started to happen. It was like, well, look, if Starfield's going to be the face of the Xbox brand, it can't just be, you know, this Skyrim, like a Fallout 76 style disaster. I thought of Skyrim's glitch with the giants flying through the air. And I was like, you can't launch it like that. It's got to be better.
Yeah, to be fair, Skyrim had its notoriously bad PS3 launch. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, not playing Starfield, but there has been less on my social media about how this game is broken compared to others. So that's a good sign. I have had one friend who put, I don't know, 30 hours into the game and then suddenly everything just busted and they have to start again. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
I had characters' clothes disappear a lot, which is great, which is always fun. But they, in regards to like, you know, the way that they've sort of subsumed Bethesda, like I still feel like we got a Bethesda RPG out of it. It doesn't seem like Microsoft/Xbox have too much of a hands-on approach.
No.
Which is funny though, because coming out of Redfall, it was like Spencer saying, oh, we need to be better with this. We actually do need to monitor these projects more. And a lot of the emails that leaked in the Unity stuff the FTC stuff from last week, you know, was him sort of asking his team leaders, like, where are we at? We're looking at an 18-month window of nothing. And then they proceeded to have an 18-month window of nothing. And he was like sort of addressing in those emails, oh, do we have Stalker? Is Stalker ready to go? Okay, no, the team's just announced a delay. And it was like, it's weird watching the correspondence between him and the team leaders where he's realizing his own, in theory, his own games aren't ready to ship. And it's like, I don't want them, if they do end up going with these deals, to be so like hands-on and suffocated and stuff.
Like,
you need to monitor some of it.
Yeah, instances like that kind of beget prying, where it's like, well, we don't have any games. So then we end up in a situation where they're rushing companies, like, we need something to fill this gap, which we obviously have seen with so many other companies that have bought up studios. And it's just, it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. So at least to this point, to our knowledge, they don't get that involved and be like, no, you need to bring that forward. You've got a hard release date here. We need something for this window.
Mm-hmm.
So props to Microsoft for that, at least. Like, I mean, it might be a bit of a mess over there, and we might be talking about whether or not they're going to still be producing video games or publishing anything in however many years. But I'll take that uncertainty over companies releasing busted games and then ultimately getting punished for it.
That's the thing. It's like, if you're Phil Spencer and you have, like, because in theory, a lot of the stuff that's come out of these leaks is the realization that he says whatever people want to hear in the moment kind of thing. I do think he's a really good dude. Like, you wouldn't have Xbox at all if not for him fighting for it in 2013 after the disastrous Xbox One stuff.
Yeah.
The reason Xbox exists right now is large part because of him. But a lot of the stuff that came out of those emails was him, you know, in one part saying he's like, you know, pro dev, take as much time as they need, but also it would be a career move to acquire Nintendo, and I do want to make these big executive moves and everything, which is fine. But like, I like the potential of an undercurrent of finance or funding that would then allow any idea to get off the ground, and they have the audience of at least 20 million subs every month. So it's, in theory, that's pro game and pro game mechanics and risk and creative risk and everything, and where it mitigates creative risk, because it means that you can just get anything on that service. And in theory, that would free up all the devs that don't end up making Anthems and Avengers and Suicide Squads and whatever to try and please shareholders and hit all these ridiculous profit margins. So like, there's a way, I can see what they're going for. But at the same time, it feels like they just have to keep consuming so many studios to build that library to hope that it pays off in the future, which I guess is why at the minute he's sort of, and I'll mention his quote in a bit, but talking about potentially leaving the industry in 2027 if this doesn't work.
Yeah, there's a worrying thought about ceilings with that kind of thing. And I mean, how long has Game Pass been around now? It's quite a while.
Ooh, that's a good question. So you say like 2017, maybe?
Yeah,
then?
I was going to say it's at least 5 years or something. So you'd hope that it has an attractive back catalogue at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if they keep wanting to buy companies, clearly Microsoft don't think that's the case.
Well, that's the thing.
You can't rely on, this is it now, we're done. You need to keep adding to it. But it seems such an extreme speed of buying.
What's kind of interesting as well is, like, you look at the way that other companies do their libraries, and like, PlayStation, PlayStation Plus is like terrible, but it's mostly terrible in regards to the legacy stuff. Like the PS1 library might as well not exist. And the PS2 stuff, some of it's still broken. If you try and play the Ape Escape on there, it's still broken. Nintendo, though, It's a weird thing because I don't want them to copy this one to one, but they do limited release stuff, or they did it with Mario when they remastered like 64 Sunshine,
yeah.
And Galaxy, but then it was like, oh, it's only available for a few months, and that sucks. Digital scarcity just doesn't need to be a thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you could do a thing where, like they're doing with F-Zero 99 at the minute, where it's like, oh, you know, this game is available for this many months, but you know it's on rotation or something like that, and they can say, like, hey, look, it's Doom month because they finally have you know they have all those games, and then you're incentivized to go on them. Maybe there's leaderboards, maybe there's like more achievements associated with it, or Microsoft rewards or something.
That would be the way to do it, is to add some
like use the library,
yeah, add some stuff that doesn't make it like taking games down. Yeah. It's like all obviously all everyone knows that, but what you just said there about adding achievements or some kind of incentive, leaderboards, some kind of multiplayer thing here or there depending on the franchise to emphasize stuff is actually a really cool idea.
Thank
certainly.
You Because just the way that they are, they've got like they're buying all this stuff up and doing nothing with it. They just sort of put it in this big landfill and just pointed it and go like, it's over there now.
And it becomes harder for them to advertise what Game Pass, like the highlights of Game Pass at that point.
Very
right?
good point, yeah.
Like without something where it's like, we're going to focus on this. But then everyone else is also on the same kind of level company-wise. They're like, well, why aren't we getting advertising? Mm. And that's one of the pratfalls of having a situation like that where it's like, we bought into all of these companies. Mm. How do we appropriately give them all what they need and be as impartial as we can be within reason. Obviously, some companies are going to demand more attention because we spent more money on them and they make more money for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a weird balancing act that even, yeah, 5 or 6 years or whatever in, I don't feel like they've really done a good job of marketing particular like, highlights of Game Pass.
You'll get on
the Game Awards or whatever, or the Xbox showcases, they'll be like, all these games are coming to Game Pass. But that's just for us, like diehards that watch the streams live or whatever.
Yes.
A wider audience, they're just like, Game Pass, it's got loads of games on it, and that's about it.
That's the weird thing, because it's like, yeah, like trying to sort of like talk to people who just have a Game Pass subscription. It's like they just kind of check in every month. And then it's just something sticks out. Like one of my cousins sort of just opens it up, looks at the artwork and just sort of goes, oh, okay, like that looks kind of action-y. Maybe it's that. But then so much stuff gets overlooked. And it's like, I guess that's kind of on them, maybe like a console feature to try and like front load the demos more, make sure there's demos for everything where it's easier to dive into those things. And maybe going forward, the amount that they want to invest in xCloud stuff or the Xbox streaming stuff, they could make it so you just hit a button and play like 20 minutes of something like immediately, like as fast as it comes up onto the console. Because that's in theory what they've been sort of testing for quite a while now in terms of the streaming to phones and everything. Mm-hmm. The Xbox, the Phil Spencer quote though, about the health of Xbox in general, this just came from the ongoing FTC investigation into the acquisition of Activision Blizzard, saying that they would leave in 2027. He says, I can fairly safely say that if we do not make more progress than this off of console, we would exit the gaming business, which is kind of an echo of what happened 10 years ago, because the Xbox One failed so hard that, according to the various insider reports at the time, the Xbox brand was on the chopping block then. And it was Phil Spencer, it was those conversations, obviously it's more than just him, but who were able to say, know that it's worth sticking around. And I guess at that point they planned this whole subscription future thing.
Yeah.
And to my point of view, they kind of sacrificed the Xbox One generation to do it, to plan all this stuff. And then this is kind of like, this either works or they go, we actually can't make this work at all, but we've made so many bets in these directions that we just need to leave altogether.
It's insane to think that it's even a possibility.
Yeah.
But as we just said, sort of statistically speaking and stuff like that, it does feel like a possibility, even despite the fact that the Xbox 360 is like was such a huge deal.
How I wish they get back to that.
I know how we've got to here in like 10 years' time is just insane to me.
Mm-hmm. Bring back the blades, I say. That's, if you want to go,
that's a solution.
Yeah, just literally put the blades back on the dashboard.
To be honest, though, they could do some nostalgia. Yeah. They could do with some nostalgia.
They were so close because the newest dashboard that's out, it puts categories at the top of the screen. So you've got like games and apps and the marketplace and whatever. And I was like, just put them on the triggers so I can LBRB between them. Then you've got a nice little hybrid approach to it, but they still haven't got that. But they've kind of spectacularly failed to tap back into the energy of the 360. That was when they were like on top of the world back then.
I think that, for better or worse, it's too much looking forward almost to the point where, and we talked about this with the sort of leaked next Xbox console, where it's like, they're not really focusing on what's going on right now. They're not looking at maximizing what they've got or trying to focus. What would be great if Xbox was the system where games actually always worked. Like they really focused on making this generation work, which it doesn't right now, but they're too busy looking, planning towards the future, which And perhaps that's a fallout from, as you say, sort of skipping over Xbox One in order to build the future, which perhaps was the right move, but they've kept that going instead of actually, focusing on advertising and marketing correctly, delivering an experience. You do need a certain amount of nostalgia. We just talked about the PlayStation Plus is a terrible system with the nostalgia of the PS1. Yeah. But at least they did something where it's like, here's some old games. The PS Mini, for example. Again, it was pretty crap, but they tried something. Xbox, from my memory, have not really done a whole lot of, like, remember how good Xbox used to be?
No.
Which is a part of building a brand, unfortunately.
And it's like, those things are available. Like, they have the Halo Master Chief Collection, they have the entire history of Gears, they have Fable, but, like, in regards to the acquisition stuff, they don't put it alongside and just sort of, like you said, like, put that front and center and be like, remember when you really loved Xbox? Because it's one of those things where, like, when Starfield came back around across the last month or so, it was good to champion Xbox again. Like, it felt good. It was like, oh my god, you guys finally have a thing again, and it's the first time you've had, like, a really outwardly recommendable title in like 10 years, because there is all that goodwill just kind of sitting there that they just they're always off planning all these different cloud moves and subscription models and everything else. And it's like, there is goodwill if you just focus on the games and try and shift stuff now and build to it more naturally. But it's a hard thing to, like, try and navigate. Obviously, at the minute, because they weren't expecting the leak to happen, there's a lot of damage control happening.
Sure.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
And there's obviously Phil Spencer and everyone else out there saying it's very disappointing that this stuff has leaked and that, you know, those plans are outdated and whatever. But I think the fact that they were at one point talking about trying to acquire Nintendo only points in the direction that they want to take this eventually and have this big sort of monopoly on streaming catalogs and everything for the monthlies. Let's talk about stuff that we're playing, though. Sea of Stars. How are you getting on with Sea of Stars?
It's great. I kind of hate that I love it so much.
Okay.
So we just talked about nostalgia.
Yes.
Right? And nostalgia can be good. Nostalgia can be bad. Mm-hmm. I tend to like games where I feel like, oh, this is a new experience. Mm-hmm. Sea of Stars is really largely not that.
I think it
doesn't feel like it's pushing anything forward for me.
No. it's really easy to play. I love the art style. I was looking forward looking forward to this so much because I love the messenger so much. And I love Sabotage Studios. They're so cool. Like follow them on social media and everything. Not sponsored by them, I should clarify, but I'm a very big fan. And so when this came out that they were putting all of the money from the messenger into their dream, like, old school RPG, JRPG, I was like, this is awesome. But for me, like, the story is just not there. Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to obviously, like, lay on thick the compliments for everything else, because I did just start off saying it doesn't move the industry forward, but it's so much fun. The battle system, I find, really, it's a wonderful challenge. Like, I've died so many times and then come back to a battle and be like, right, okay, this is how to prioritize what I want to do. Mm-hmm. If you say the art style is great, the music's great. The story is
that's the thing,
a
and I'm
big
like
letdown.
But. Yeah, and it's like the combat mechanics, like, they have quite a lot in common with. It reminds me of the Mario and Luigi games, like the Superstar Saga.
Sure.
And it's like, but I also like a Mario RPG. Like, everything is a timing mini game to do stuff. But, like, because you're doing that in every fight, every time. Where I am now, I'm about 8 hours in, maybe 9 or 10 hours. I only finally just now got a new character,
right?
And then she has another, like, timing mechanic thing that I can do, and that's cool. And, like, finally where I am now, something has happened in the story with a little bit of, like, peril.
Right.
When I was Googling, like, does Sea of Stars story get good? When does it get good? There are, like, Reddit posts of people in social media stuff just saying, like, yeah, it's kind of just, you know, things happen, but it's mostly just this kind of, like, super everything's great kind of tone, which is very charming and nice, but I don't feel the pull to see what's next because I don't think it has anything to show me.
Yeah. There have been a few moments. I'm a little bit further ahead than you. There have been a few moments where I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. This is interesting. And that new character you mentioned is quite an interesting character in the grand scheme of things.
Okay.
Largely, the intrigue comes from me being like, you know, what locale are we going to explore next? And, you know, what weird and wonderful enemies do you get to fight? I just encountered something that was like some big, it's like an ape made of ice and he's a DJ. And he's called like Boulder Douche. And I'm like, this is fantastic.
Wait, why is that not more front loaded? They should have like opened the game on
that. There is some like sort of like winks and nods to the genre history of the past and a bunch of gags in there if you're looking for it, which I really approve of.
Because the messenger was really funny. Like, it was really sharp and it was very aware of the audience.
It's a little
more
hidden in this. You have to go looking for it a little bit, I think.
Because, like, overall,
it's very charming. It's so charming. It's just a shame that the story is... It's a bit of a letdown, but it's definitely not turned me off the game at all. I'm still slightly but surely making my way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's one of those things where like it's super easy to pick up and play. And it is, funnily enough, it's on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus. Sure. I think it's the first game that did both at the same time, or one of the first games to do that. So it's super easy to get if you have either of those services.
Also on Switch?
I ended up buying it on Switch because I wanted it remote, even though I have PlayStation Plus and Game Pass. But I was like, I want to play it on the train and everything. And it is very beautiful and everything. It's just, for me, I'm not struggling with it, but I want a story hook. I want something other than there's evil in the land and we should go find it and kill it.
My thing, we're getting really inside baseball here, but my problem with it is so there are two sort of what do they call it? Duologists, it's like two protagonists.
Deuterologists?
That's it. Something like, sure. That sounds like you study something. So there's two sort of protagonists. One is my element is sun, one is my element is moon, and they've got a third friend who's just like, I'm generic human guy.
Yes, and I think everything's great.
And protect
them at all costs.
That's fine. But he is like this main story point.
Yeah.
It continues to be about him.
Right.
To the point where I'm at, where I'm like, what about these cool people that have got weapons and can wield magic and stuff? This guy's got a cooking pot lid.
Yeah, and like, I'm loving the cooking stuff, but that was my thing, because I think he's called Garl, the third dude. Yeah. And like, he's very, everything's great, like, let's throw the peace symbols, like, power of love. And I'm all about power of love, like, genuinely. If we can, you know, bring things together more, I'm sure it'd be better. But in regards to that game, you have two characters that have been through, it's like 10 years of training or something. Like,
they spend the whole time being like, man, I wish we were hanging out with Garl.
Yeah. I was like, no, you can wield.
He's Poochie, basically.
You can wield the sun. Like, how is that not cooler? And then it's one of those things where, like, it takes ages for you to get new abilities. Like, I feel like I've had the same abilities for about 8-9 hours. Finally, I have new stuff now, but.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where there isn't a lot of abilities or a lot of advancement. I think, like, in the grand scheme, I don't think that it's a hugely long game.
Right.
So they don't overwhelm you with loads and loads. It's just like us, which I actually kind of appreciate. Like, it feels compact and nice that way, but I totally get you. Like, I'm at the point where it's like, right, I've had four characters and Garl's been on the back row with the entire time. Don't use him. Don't care if he's apparently the main character. Don't care.
Because he's kind of like, he's at the minute he's out of my story. I'm like, good. I don't want to save him. Like, just leave him over there for a bit. And let me prioritize the two main characters. But I think I like the idea that they sort of made this as like someone first JRPG. Like, it very easily could.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Like same way as like that, you know, the Mario Luigi games or Mario RPG.
I was going to argue for the challenge of it, not so much, but there is a bunch of like accessibility things that you can buy from a store. It's like, I'll make this easier for you. Like heal me at the end of every battle and stuff like that. So that's cool.
It is worth saying actually in regards to the turn-based stuff that like you will get hit. Like it's not all of you take a shot and all of the enemies take a shot. Everyone has timers. So it's like the enemies have, and it's nearly always just one or two turns. So it's like, you know, you're going to get hit next turn and you can only do one move and then that boss will do something. Sometimes you can knock them out with stuff and delay things. For me, it's nowhere near as in depth as like Octopath Traveler or Final Fantasy X, like where I'm really like remixing the timeline. Like that newest character I have has one move that can kick someone down the timeline, but that's it. But in a way, that's quite good at maintaining challenge, because then you're always thinking about healing. You're always thinking about, you know, and even when someone dies, they come back two turns later, which is quite handy. And so like they've got a nice little set of mechanics. It's just, for me, it doesn't have the story pull. And it's like you said, because they almost let you, they reframe it so that the helper character is the main character and they talk the most and everything else. And they're insufferable. It's just kind of like, oh God, I just want to play as the actual warriors that I'm doing stuff with. It's cool to finally touch in on Sea of Stars, because it's one of the highest rated games of the year. Like it's in the 90s and it's insane. Like I'm not feeling that yet, but I'm hoping that maybe it comes full circle eventually or something. Let's talk about Resident Evil 4. You finished the Separate Ways DLC, Ada Wong.
Just about in time to get the train up here. I was like, whoosh.
You're like 3 days for it or something.
Yeah, I've been very busy, unfortunately, so I didn't get as much time with it as I'd like. Mm-hmm. I have finished a run through of it, and for, I don't know, £8, $10, it took me about 6 hours game time, which I think is a little bit longer than some people. Mm-hmm. And then you add some cutscenes onto that and a few deaths, so it's a little bit longer. So price-wise, it's very, very reasonable. And as a redo of Resident Evil 4's original expanded material, Separate Ways was what was packaged in with the PlayStation 2 port as a like, oh, buy it again. It's so much more than that.
That's my main
asset flip, that it was just like, it's just a bunch of extra missions going maybe backwards through, and you've got a new kick and a bow. About it, you know, so this has got a whole bunch more to it, and it feels, I was really expecting that to just be like, here's a bunch of missions. But this time you do interact with the merchant, so you get to do all the upgrading weapon stuff that you're used to from the campaign. There's a lot of choice in that. Treasure collecting from the main campaign is in it and stuff like that. So
do they do like a better job of, because that's the thing, on that original one I was quite let down by. Like, I really love Ada Wong and I wanted more from her as a character, so when we got the DLC, well, I guess it was the add-on thing back in the day, I didn't like that it was just like the same areas, and it was, they were trying to like, oh, she was here the whole time, she was like watching from this point of view, and I was like, that's a cool idea. But then you're doing, like in the PS2 one, you're doing the village invasion twice, which like I was like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it was like all these two characters were right next to each other, but they didn't know about each other, kind of thing. But in this one, it's more like, it is more believable or whatever, like they consider it more. Like it seems like they've done like a better job of
It's very clear that this time they thought about it beforehand when they wrote the story, basically, for the remake. It's like, right, okay, well let's write these both at the same time and make sure they overlap nicely. There isn't a lot of like, hey, I can see that character in the background, but you certainly know where Leon is in sort of conjunction with where you are in Ada's story. Like, oh, okay, this is when Leon was fighting this dude.
Cool.
So it connects together. It answers a bunch of storyline threads a little bit, and it actually kind of ignores some stuff from the original for whatever reason as well. Like, there's almost no Krauser in it, which was a big part of the original. So that was an odd choice, but fair enough. But you get a lot more of the new Wesker, who's fantastic.
This is because we're not going to do spoilers, but like as a wider conversation, do you think they're building to doing RE5? Because I've seen the general sentiment of like they plant enough seeds in this that they could then pivot into RE5, because it's very Wesker heavy.
I can absolutely understand why people are getting that impression. That's what I'll say. I wouldn't necessarily go that route right away. There's a lot of stuff that you should do from a broader storyline thing before Resident Evil 5 that they need to potentially reestablish for a new audience. You can't really just, well, maybe you can just jump in, but I personally would prefer if they went back a bit. But I would say that it seems to imply that, certainly.
Interesting. Them doing more Wesker stuff is fun, because obviously like he's only at the very end of the remake, like Ada's been messaging, talking to or whatever. So I like the idea of them fleshing that stuff out. Where are you at in terms of them, this remake's timeline? Do you want them to stop or do you want them to keep going?
I don't think that's what I want. They're going to do what they make money. Like,
they listen to this podcast, they know what's going on.
They're going to do it. They make money. I think all the remakes have been really great games. I've got, you know, positives and negatives to say about how the storyline has been handled in certain aspects, as a bit of a diehard lore nerd for it all. But when it comes to 4, like, it was one of those ones where it was like, this seems unnecessary. When it came out, I was like, do you know, I I'm one of those people, I prefer it over the original.
Right, okay. So, yeah. I went back and forth on that a lot as I was playing through it, because I was like, I love the whole, like plant your feet and defend this corner, like, kind of gameplay in the originals. I was like, I like kiting the enemies into a certain spot and take them all out. But the more time I spent with RE4, the remake, I was like, no, this is just liquid butter. This thing moves and just works so well.
Nice to play.
And it's like, it's so chunky, like, it's so satisfying. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things where, like, that game came out, and then I went to Japan, so I did, like, a bit of it, and then tried to go back, and I restarted and whatever. No, I didn't restart. That was Josh's big thing. He was like, you need to restart. And I was like, no, I remember everything. It's Leon and the villagers. It'll be fine. but yeah, it's one of those things where, like, now, where because of where they are and because they're handling everything so well, and they've kind of got this whole reworked timeline, even something like you said with Ada Wong, like, they know her going in, so we can write a better story. I'm curious if they then do RE5 and 6. To me, I like the challenge, or the perceived challenge, from the audience point of view, of them tackling the more negatively received ones. I loved RE5 back in the day. Mm-hmm. 6 is the only one that I didn't finish. But I like the idea of them going back to 6 and being like, okay, we're not chasing Gears of War anymore. Is there a way to save 6?
Well, exactly. Like, the Resident Evil 4 remake leans way more into horror than the original did. Mm. Like, certainly. Like, I still don't know. There are a few parts, certainly, but largely I wouldn't still call it a horror game, but it's got way more of a horror aesthetic than the original did. And I'd like to see them carry that through into 5 if they were to remake it, absolutely. Like,
right.
To carry what they've got into a remake. Mm. I think it still has to be co-op, though. That was such a big part of Resident Evil 5. And it's something that's been missing from the series for a long time, because we haven't had it. 7 and 8, obviously, completely solo games. Mm-hmm. None of the remakes have had any cooperative stuff. Mm. So I think they do need to do that. But tonally, they need to reimagine it a little bit. And there's a lot they could do. I really think, as I say, like, all the remakes have been really good. They'll probably smash it out of the park. So whether or not I'm like, maybe I don't want it, but I'm sure I'll buy it, and I'm sure it'll be great. That's
I think
the thing.
It's like, it's interesting looking at Resident Evil overall, like you mentioned tonally, because it's like, is it Death Island is the new animated movie?
Yeah.
And it's like, that is so over the top and so like Avengers style. He has all the heroes coming together to fight like a giant tentacle thing. And that is more, or would be more at home with where the whole IP was around about RE5 and 6. And it's like, that's interesting that like from sort of 7 onwards, but even then there's like bits of 7 and 8 that are more over the top.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially 8.
Yeah. Like the big fight or the Jack Baker fight in 7 or whatever. So I'm like, can you, as Capcom, can you still do the crazy stuff? Or are you trying to sort of make it more horror, like you said with RE4 remake? That's interesting when they get back around, cyclically, they get back around to where they went off the rails in the first place. Do they do it again, or do they try and stick to, like, you know, horror aesthetics and atmospheres and everything?
I don't see a 6 remake happening. It's just,
really?
I think they just want to divorce themselves from the title of Resident Evil 6 as much as possible. I couldn't see that, because you get dangerously close to a Resident Evil 7 remake at that point.
God,
like, what are we doing at that point? My problem more with the remakes, as good as they are, is like the development time could go into new stories and stuff like that. Like, we used to have so many Resident Evil spin-offs and, you know, the Revelations games and stuff before that in the 2000s, where there was all kinds of weird and wacky Outbreak and Dead Aim and the Umbrella Chronicles and all that stuff. We don't get that anymore because they're doing remakes, which is a shame, because all the Resident Evil characters are in their 50s, essentially, late 40s and getting into their 50s.
God,
you need to tell some more stories with these characters now before you have to get rid of them.
Because that's the thing that they tried to do a little bit in the Shadow of Rose DLC, where it's like, we're potentially handing this down. I mean, obviously Ethan was a new character anyway.
Sure.
And then it's like, we're handing it over to her. And then I've not played the Shadow of Rose stuff, but like,
what's weird about that is, and this isn't really a spoiler, is that it ends with a title card that says, and thus the Winters family story is over. So you're like, oh, you've invented a new character. You've given us superpowers. You've jumped 18 years into the future of the canon.
Yeah.
And then you've gone, right, well, we're done. So I don't know. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. They could go back to her and be like, well, anyway, here's our new story.
But yeah. It's like, it's interesting in terms of like, then trying to pass the torch, because it happens so much in entertainment. Like, my go-to is always Rocky handing things down to Apollo Creed or the other Creed. I forget his first name, but that dude.
The hilarious thing is, with Resident Evil 6, if it was a success, we would have had this long ago, because that game was absolutely doing it. It introduced so many new characters who Capcom are almost afraid of talking about again because of the association with Resident Evil 6.
Yeah, like Jake Wesker.
And Sherry Birkin came back and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they did have one character they killed off, which they shouldn't in that game. But regardless, like, it felt like they were setting up for a new generation, and then they abandoned it because it was such a success, unsuccessful game. And they were just going to do a soft reboot.
It's so fascinating, because I'm just in my head, I'm like, if Metallica can make Saint Anger work, and I always love Saint Anger, but like,
great record.
Yeah, it is
great record.
And, they're touring that now, and they not just by itself, but it's part of their sets
now.
that's seen anger to
the
it.
Whole album.
I would go see that. Give me Dirty Window all day long. But yeah, they've like put that as part of their sets now because enough fans know like that album, yeah. And it's okay to admit you like Saint Anger. So I'm just like, if that can be done, then maybe anything's possible.
Saint Anger and Resident Evil 6 got a lot in common. Both, everything goes on way too long.
Yeah, just they sort of like represent the pivot, the downfall for a while, but they came back around. And we're going to talk about Yakuza / Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth to close things off because me and you are massive Yakuza / Like a Dragon fans, and the Infinite Wealth gameplay demo came out over the weekend. It was at the Ryo Gagatoku stream, which was just them showing off how the new game's going to be. But I think it's worth touching on like how much they are doubling down on the insanity of Yakuza 7, where it's like that game introduced turn-based combat, which we could talk about that, but like my general thoughts on that were that you've taken the brawling, the animations and the general sort of feel of it, and then added turn-based combat to it. And I love turn-based combat. It's my favorite genre. It's my favorite sort of game mechanic. But for me in Yakuza 7, I was always like dialing in a move, and then my dude would like run in to do it, and an NPC would just walk in the way. And it was just like, I was never like, it was because you're fighting in a city, but it's like, you've not like refined this enough. So I know in the new one they've apparently they've prioritized that, so your moves all...
I never had that problem.
God, I had it all the time. And I was like just always trying to move people in the right way, and I was like, this just feels like a fan mod for the original Yakuza. Okay. So like I couldn't get on board with Yakuza 7, which was called Yakuza 7 Like a Dragon in the West, because of that. And so like, but where are you at on the turn-based stuff, and I guess how Infinite Wealth looks?
So that's where I came in.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that is the only one that I've played.
No way.
I played a little bit of Zero. I played like the prologue, and I probably should get back to it and give it a second chance.
Right.
But I definitely gel well more with turn-based combat in general. Mm-hmm. Like you, like that's something that always attracts me. Yeah, that game really won me over. And as a bit of a soft reboot in itself, with like a new protagonist and stuff, it's a great place to jump in. Mm-hmm. Plus the stylistic change that you just talked about.
And there's kart racing.
Yeah. And some of the wackiest, weirdest, most wonderful cast characters ever. So when they did 10 minutes of like a Dragon 8 cutscenes as a trailer, which was absolutely mad. I don't know how much of the story they've given away or not. There was a big bombshell in the middle of that. I was like, what? You're telling me that in the trailer?
Right.
Okay. Huge, huge sort of like...
Maybe I've not seen that. I've only seen the gameplay demo. I've not seen the cutscene stuff.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I'm not going to say what it is, obviously. But like, and then they did the gameplay, and I'm like, yeah, this looks like more of what I loved about it. Showing off some of the... So for those that haven't played it, it's a little bit of a pastiche of RPGs in the way that like they make fun of a bunch of tropes and do it in their own way because it's a modern setting game. So like in Final Fantasy, you would summon like a giant demon to do your bidding. In Yakuza, you pull out your mobile phone and call your mate who wears, you know, a sumo diaper.
Who's got lobsters for hands or whatever it is.
Right, yeah. You know, that's exactly the thing I was going to talk about. There's a side quest in Yakuza 7 where you save a crawfish from being eaten and then it becomes a summonable character. And it appeared in the trailer for Like a Dragon 8, and me and my housemate both cheered.
Good.
We were like, yes, the boy's back.
It's so because I've been with Yakuza since the very, very beginning, and like I was always writing articles wanting them to come to the West more because the Western releases were always about a year or two behind the Eastern ones, and we would always end up getting whatever numbered Yakuza game as the next one was releasing in Japan or in the East. And so like it was one of those things where like I think Yakuza 0 was the one where they finally unified them, and we all got Yakuza 0 at the same time. And then, and I was like, thank the maker or whatever, we're finally keeping up with these releases. But it's interesting, having been with it since the beginning, how just over the top it's got. And like, I'm there for the vast, vast majority of it. But one of the criticisms of like Yakuza 6 was that it was meant to be the end of Kiryu's story. And then it was like, and you also had him dodging missiles and taking on like entire cities of people and stuff, which is really fun. But it almost made the game into like a Musou game, like a Dynasty Warriors.
Right.
And then that's what the new one is, the spin-off one, where it's the man who sold his name.
Yeah,
like a Dragon Gaiden or whatever. And it's almost them giving in to how over the top and ridiculous it is. And now that you have the next numbered one, Infinite Wealth, I guess it's technically numbered, but it is like the eighth main installment. And Kiryu's back, even though he's...
The weird thing there is the fact that we just talked about Resident Evil and they've done the same thing, where it's like, it's the eighth game, but we're not going to put it in the title. But we are going to put it in the logo, because it's the infinite symbol is the eight.
Yeah.
Like, just come on, guys.
And it's like, it is a continuation, and we are sort of like, it's Ichiban Kazuga and Kazuma Kiryu. And it's like, that's really cool, but like, Kiryu's got this weird different hairstyle. He's like a different dude. And it's like, post after he's eliminated his identity in the other game, the Gaiden thing. But my overall point is that the amount of stuff that is now coming to the West is awesome. for Like a Dragon slash Yakuza fans. However, the amount of stuff that's available, I haven't finished Like a Dragon Ishin from earlier this year.
Yeah.
Just because it's in amongst so much other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm like aware that we're getting the spin-off one and the next main one.
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah. I can't even keep up anymore.
Gaiden comes out in November.
Yeah.
And then Infinite Wealth comes out in January. It's crazy.
And they're massive games as well.
Yeah. I'm probably going to skip Gaiden because I don't have investment in that. I think I would need more investment in that character. Mm. I can't just jump in his story there. It just seems probably not the right way to do it. So I don't have that problem, but I feel the pain of Yakuza fans. It's like, we've gone from having nothing to too much, almost.
And it's like Yakuza 7.
The big games. Like,
oh, they're huge.
There's so much like side content to potentially do. Mm-hmm.
But it's like in Yakuza 7, like with Kazuga, because he's sort of like, you know, he's a huge Dragon Quest fan in the world, in lore, in context, he sees battles as Dragon Quest fights, which is why it's Tim. I was like, that's great. And that's really, really cool. But at the same time, like you have those over the top summons, and in the new one, they have like a, it's like you're on like a bike and you're delivering parcels, but you're jumping around rooftops and stuff. And I was like, oh, so we're just full, acknowledging what humans can do anymore, which is fine. Like I said, we've kind of had that from like Yakuza 6 with Kiryu, but it took ages to get there.
I think it really works with Ichiban as a character because it's like just this complete nutter, like super positive. He's one of the most likable video game characters I think I've ever encountered.
He's what Gaul should be.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I find a lot of protagonists, especially like the super posy anime type, get incredibly dull. But I think he's great, and they've really pulled it off, which is incredible. You talked about Kiryu's story and him, you know, bowing out, and they've passed the torch over in 7, and they seem to be doing it again in this game. Mm-hmm. It's like maybe for real this time.
It's just they've killed Kiryu twice over, and it's going to be a third time, I guess, by the time.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Like they've done the whole, it's his last game, guys, we're definitely done. And then that was in Yakuza 5, and then like he sort of, there was like a little sliver of hope in 5 that he could still be alive. And then 6 was definitely his last game, which they only did because they had a new engine for it, and it was like, well, we might as well do another Yakuza game in this new Dragon engine. And then it was like, we're passing it over to Ichiban. It's definitely done.
Here using this game.
But then he's back again because the post credits in 6 revealed that he was still alive. Yeah. And it was just like, okay, like I love the character, so fine. But like at some point you need to kind of pivot. And then I forget the names of the dudes who I think have left or are leaving Ryo Gagatoku Studios because they've been with the franchise for so long.
Right.
And it's like, it's in an interesting place right now because you've got Infinite Wealth and it is so over the top and ridiculous. And there is this really good positive reception to the turn-based stuff. So I'm like, maybe this just is the pivot. And then it's like the brawler games are kind of done because even the Like a Dragon Gaiden is more like a Musou game. From what they've shown, it's more like a Dynasty Warriors.
I suppose if they're going to carry on, I don't know too much about the series, but there's also the Judgment games. Is that right?
Like, yeah. Those
could potentially carry on the beat-em-up style.
Well, they've been hampered because there's there's Judgment and Lost Judgment. They're both phenomenal.
The actor is something controversy, right? Is that what
it's not the actor, it's the person who the company that licenses that actor are very scared of digital online services.
Oh, okay.
And they think that if the game is made available on more platforms, you know, if it was a PC release or whatever, that someone would get access to that actor's likeness and then would use them in projects, and they don't like that, so they got in the way. I think they got in the way of Lost Judgment being on PC. They got in the way of something
that,
and they also
right,
put
yeah.
a stop to in for now more Judgment games.
Do you know, we laugh,
which
but
is
I
ridiculous
feel, I can actually sort of see where they're coming
I know.
From in the world of mods and stuff like that. I can sort of see it.
But it's
you need to be aware of this when you sign these contracts.
Yeah.
It's a silly thing to do in retrospect.
It's worth just shouting out that Judgment, especially Lost Judgment, because there's a way better combat system. Lost Judgment is one of the best Yakuza games, but it doesn't have that name. But it's the same engine, same city.
Yeah,
the gameplay is
give
great.
It a go. It's got, one of them's got my boy Zhao in it from 7. I think he shows up as a cameo. So that immediately, I'm like, okay. I'll
right. Because it's all the ways that they've sort of handled the IP over the years, like Kenny Omega and a bunch of the New Japan dudes are in Yakuza 6, and then they did the spin-off thing with Judgment, which like you said might have initially been the idea of the future of the brawler stuff, but then all the things happened with the actors, company, everything. But like I said, overall fascinating place to be in, and because I've been with it since 2004, since it first came over, and it was marketed as the next GTA, which it never was. And then those original games just bombed commercially because they just weren't at all what it was advertised as. But yeah, overall, this has been the Wind Up Podcast. I've been your host Scott Tilford. That's been Sly White.
Bye.
We'll catch you next time.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.